Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of Hot on the Outside, Freezing Cold in the Middle, Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad. Clever intro here. Welcome to the movie segment. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today, with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget. Plus gifts for gamers of all ages, Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one, or keep it forever and pay a lot less than in-store prices. And they just updated their rewards program where you can stack up to $20 in coupons toward any purchase. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Justin, I have been in meetings literally all week. I have had absolutely no social engagements whatsoever. May I please live vicariously through you?
Gentlemen.
Pilot Party! Pilot Party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because I dropped the remote into the bath, and now it randomly selects a different show every 30 to 45 minutes. Vice Chairman Lee Young-jun enters a party, passes several guests who seem to know him, flops down in a chair, and asks the all-important question, what is wrong with Secretary Kim? This also happens to be the title of our show, a 2018 offering from South Korea. Subtitles only. Get ready to read.
Oh, boy. I can't read South Korean.
English. English subtitles.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah. Kim Mi-so is Young Jun's personal secretary. She oversees all professional and personal needs he may have, from getting his morning tea to helping him tie his tie. It's here we see that Young Jun is a narcissist of the highest order, even stopping her mid-sentence to point out how bright his aura is that morning. Over the course of the morning, we see several things. Despite his narcissistic tendencies, Young Jun is very good at his job. Very high charisma, very high intelligence. Kim is equally good at hers. After Young Jun effectively fires an executive for hiring sexual favors on company time, she claims she calms the executive and says that the vice chairman has been having a rough morning and that he should take the rest of the day off. As soon as the executive is gone, she calls security to have his office cleaned out. We also see the dynamic in their relationship. He compliments her English, but is very quick to point out mistakes. She placates him by saying she would not have gotten so good if it wasn't for his constant corrections. He agrees and says he'll continue to do so. That evening, they attend a party where Young Jun is talking to foreign ministers and other high-profile guests. At one point, he excuses himself from a conversation, heads to a trio of beautiful women, walks past them to a mirror, and begins admiring himself.
That's a good one. That's a good joke.
Yeah. I like that joke.
Yeah.
Kim joins him, reassures him he looks perfect, and they continue on. On the drive home, she says she's going to resign. No reason is given. What happens over the rest of the episode is a comedy of errors on Young Jun's part and a glimpse at who Kim really is. Young Jun is desperately trying to figure out why Kim is leaving, and comes to the conclusion that it's because she loves him. His evidence? Well, the night at the party, his current fling shows up and is pouty because it's her birthday, and there's no flowers or presents. Kim, on instinct, runs to the flower shop, gets a nice bouquet, and when she returns, her eyes are wet with tears. Young Jun assumes it's because she had to buy flowers for another woman. What he didn't see was that she had an extremely allergic reaction to the flowers and sneezed her entire way back to the party. At the end of the episode, Young Jun goes to Kim's house and basically demands to know why she's leaving. Kim says that she's been at his beck and call for 9 years. And if she continues, she can't date or get married, something she very much wants to do. Young Jun understands and does the only right thing he can do. Allows her to marry him. Credits.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
This is funny, but clearly nothing new.
No.
Shows have been doing the will they, won't they trope for decades. That being said, the writing is good, and so is the acting. The only issue I had was watching the subtitles, and that's because the dialogue is so quick, the text had to be quick as well, so I had to pause and rewind a few times to catch what was said. Now for my predictions. Unfortunately, this is as formulaic as it gets, and I wasn't even halfway through the episode when I figured out what would happen. Kim and Young Jun will do this back and forth routine, and they'll, you know, of are they in love, aren't they? Everyone will see it except them. In the end, however, Kim will reveal that she's the long-lost heir of an even bigger company than Young Jun's, conduct a hostile takeover, and hire the now jobless Young Jun as her personal secretary, and the cycle begins anew. I give it 4 rich narcissistic men with bright auras out of 5.
I kind of like that prediction.
I do too.
I would watch that.
I think that I would be on board.
Yeah.
What was the name of that one more time?
What is wrong with Secretary Kim?
What is wrong with Secretary Kim?
Yep.
It is okay. Based off of a book, which was then later turned into a webcomic and now a TV series.
That's crazy. All right. Men, because both of you identify such.
Yes.
There are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are as lost as the Robinson family. This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It was good then. The original's just as good now. Should we reboot it? The idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Shall we revive it? What are these characters doing after a couple of decades of growth and development? Or shall we refuse it? Chad, le heavy, heavy sigh. It is September 26th, 1990. All right. It's the decade of Hill Street Blues. Law and Order's in its, you know, beginning of its, like, second decade. And we watch a police chase. It shows up on the screen. Police cars, sirens blaring down the street. And they come up to a house, out of the cars, guns out, bust down the doors. They're going to get these narcotics dealers. Bunch of arrests are made. And as they're processed and the perps are being led away, they begin singing.
God damn it, I knew it.
They start singing "We Got the Power" because This isn't just a one-off gag. This is Cop Rock, a dark and gritty police procedural that is interspersed with song.
Damn it.
It's a musical. It lasted 11 episodes before ABC pulled the plug on it. It was both a critical and commercial failure because it was not a comedy. It was a dark, serious, subject-mattered TV police procedural and musical. It did see a DVD release in 2016, and it saw syndication in the 90s, late 90s, on A&E and VH1, and then in 2006, it came back to Trio. So, for anybody who remembers it, what do you think? Cop Rock, review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
I would just like to point out that Cop Rock is an Emmy Award winner for Outstanding Editing for a Series and Outstanding Achievement in Music and Lyrics. Randy Newman did the music and lyrics.
Yeah, and one of these days they're going to convince him to sing that song without marbles in his mouth.
I hope to be there when that happens. You know, I must have missed this one. Because I don't remember ever hearing of it or seeing an episode of it. I just looked it up while you were talking about it. And I think it's probably for the best if it stays dead.
Okay. Yeah, Justin, you're wearing a mask.
Justin knew this. So.
A heavy, heavy sigh.
Yeah, so, guys, I always watch at least an episode of anything that I present to you.
Uh-huh.
I made it about 15, 17 minutes into this.
Farther than I did.
As I was typing it up, because I wanted to get to the second song. Like, the first song was just kind of a white person definitely wrote this rap for this group of black actors kind of thing. And I'm like, that's really bad. So what's going to happen next? And I wanted to get to the second song, which is a dude who is singing about the wife that he loves, but he's apparently not going to join her in bed because work's just too pressing. And I turned it off and I said to my spouse out loud, this is bad. This is the wrong kind of bad. And she said from the other room, I was only half listening and I knew it was bad. So, yeah. Now, for those of you who are more than curious and your got to know has been triggered, the entire series.
Psychiatric help.
The entire series is available on YouTube. And you can watch all 11 episodes. And rumor has it, if you make it through all 11, then you get your first session free with that psychiatric help.
I mean, I just gotta ask.
It is just rumor, though.
But why? Why? Why would you do that?
Well, because it's that bad.
Yeah.
It's like watching a train wreck.
To quote Alfred, some people just want to watch the world burn.
There is some of that. Yeah, see, the thing is that Hill Street Blues is what got me. They wanted to do Hill Street Blues as a musical. And the guy's like, I don't think I can do that. So we'll just tuck this away and maybe we'll come back to it. And they came back to it.
They came back. They shouldn't have come back.
And they came back to it from September 26th to December 26th of the same year.
Much like a dog returning to its vomit, they came back to this.
They came back to this. All right. We got another refuse. I'll have to find something that's maybe a little bit different, a little bit more fun, a little bit upbeat, colorful.
Put it in the evidence locker of history and let it be.
Let it be. All right. So we got some trailers. I watched some previews. I like previews because they give a sense of what's coming. I mean, that is their entire job.
Yep.
So let's round them up. Avatar, The Way of Water. Sure looks pretty, but so did the last one. We know nothing about the story, but that probably doesn't matter either.
No.
Because all the money has been spent on it, and so it will make all the money back.
Somehow.
Crimes of the Future. David Cronenberg is back with some body horror stuff that I am most definitely not into. Luck.
Yep.
A cartoon black cat breaks the fourth wall a lot, takes us on a tour of what luck is and how it works. No human has ever been in the luck world, so 100% a human is definitely going to show up in the luck world.
First episode, yeah. First moment.
3,000 Years of Longing. Tilda Swinton finds a genie, Idris Elba. Turn on the subwoofer, because that voice is going to give it a workout. Elba's voice, not Tilda Swinton.
You never know.
Easter Sunday. Hey, it's a 90s family comedy made in 2022. Watch the trailer and prove me wrong. No lies detected here. Unhuman teen survival monster movie. Looks surprisingly self-aware, which may save it. Father of the Bride. Yeah, the first one made in 1950, that didn't stick. It was made better in 1991 with Steve Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the 1991 wasn't good enough. So instead, we're going to have a movie in which the mother and the father of the bride are going to be divorcing, but they're going to not tell anyone that they're divorcing, and they're going to pretend that everything's fine while they plan the wedding for their daughter. And I'm sure that it's going to work out and nothing bad will happen.
Of course.
Nope.
Prey. This is the newest Predator movie. Advanced weaponry has no power over the Predator, so we're going to go 300 years into the past, and we're going to use arrows. And then, of course, She-Hulk, Attorney at Law.
Yeah.
That woman's going to go through a whole lot of shoes if she insists on transforming all the time. However, she will not run out of shirts.
Yeah, somehow. Somehow, that's how that works.
Somehow.
Ah, if Bruce Banner can have pants that stretch, Jennifer Walters can have a top that stretches.
That's fair. So, did watch a couple of movies, not just the random movie. So, I watched Rumble. Do you guys seen this one yet on Amazon Prime?
I have not.
Okay. Rumble is a story, a world in which giant monsters and humans live side by side, and the giant monsters compete in professional wrestling style competitions, / MMA. Like, it's hard to tell if it's supposed to be real or fake. Probably real because it's a cartoon.
Hmm.
It tells an underdog story, the daughter of a famous trainer training the son of a famous champion, shenanigans, motivation, or Rudy stuff, unconventional styles, and good times all around. It's a perfectly inoffensive offering at which the good guys win. It's a happy ending almost all the way around. Show up for Tara Strong as the mother because Tara Strong is awesome, and stay for Will Arnett as our protagonist monster, Terry Crews as the villain, Chris Eubank as a bulldog monster, he's a famous boxer,
sure,
and Roman Reigns as Ramarilla Jackson, a gorilla monster that has horns.
Okay.
I give it an A- just for the sheer craziness of it.
Yeah.
And then I watched a new one today.
Yeah.
You guys watched it too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
Wait.
What?
I got to get set up for this one.
So for our audio only audience, which is all of it, he just set a couple of Chip and Dale Lego sculptures on his microphone stand, and he's trying to get them to stay. We'll see how well this works.
All right.
I'll take a picture and throw it up on the Discord.
There you go.
So I did not want to like this. I really did. I wanted to go in with a foul mood.
Yeah, it's like,
and a mind toward tearing it apart because I hated all of the trailers for it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for me, but fortunately for the movie, I had tacos for supper, and one cannot have a bad evening after having had tacos. Pretty sure it's impossible.
It was fun.
It was fun, and that's part of the problem. Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers comes in with a movie only 31 and a half years after the last episode aired, and it is a glorious mess of in-jokes, satirical advertisements, and nostalgia that kept my 40-year-old brain so focused on the background, I'm only assuming that the movie itself is good because I don't know if I actually watched it.
I watched most of it. I was looking for a lot of that stuff, too. There's so many cameos in that film.
I'm being unfair. I like the movie. It is a super light story. Characterizations are fair. And really, the biggest criticism I had is that having the original voice for Gadget was actually kind of distracting because everyone else had a different voice. And it was like, wait a minute.
I loved how it was President Palmer / the Allstate guy as Zipper the Fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, fun fact. All of the original Rescue Ranger voices had cameos in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Tress MacNeille, who was Gadget, was also the voice of Chip. And at one point, they start chattering like they normally would sound. So she provides that one.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Cummings, who was the voice of Monterey Jack, makes an appearance as various things, including Winnie the Pooh and Tigger and Fat Cat.
But not as Monterey Jack.
No, not as Monterey Jack.
Instead, they got Eric Bana for that. Or is it Bana?
Bana. I believe it's Eric Bana.
And Eric Yellowfruit.
Is that like Bimbadin Cumberbun or something?
Boomer Snooch Cauliflower? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. And, I forget his name, and it's going to drive me nuts until I come up with it. Oh, Corey Burton. Corey Burton was the original voice of Dale, which you hear the Dale chattering, and the original noise for Zipper, which you hear when Zipper first shows up before he starts actually talking.
Mm-hmm.
So all the original cast members from the show were in the movie as well. So that was a nice touch.
I think having different voice actors for the characters actually kind of helped the story, because they're pushing it as, you know, the Chip and Dale show. You know, Rescue Rangers was just a TV show, and that these mm-hmm. were actors, and so naturally they would be putting on a performance. But I would agree that, like, having Tress MacNeille voice Gadget both ways
mm-hmm.
was a bit weird.
They did explain that, because at one point they're flying around in their, you know, traditional Ranger hover.
No, they hand-waved it away is what they did.
Yeah, basically, Gadget
they said,
the character,
deal with it.
Gadget the character and Gadget the actress were just so much the same.
Now, I had read reviews going into this, spoiler-free, but I'd read reviews, a lot of them comparing it to Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And at first blush, I was like, that's a pretty specific assertion, considering that we've had a lot of animated and live action crossover films since then.
Mm-hmm.
After having seen it, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I get it. It does feel like, I mean, one, we actually got Roger freaking Rabbit in it again.
We did.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does kind of feel like this is Roger Rabbit's Toontown / Hollywood just 70 years later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to go back. The jokes that are told as part of story A are not nearly so funny to me as the stuff that's in the background.
That's fair.
E.T. and Batman.
Batman versus E.T., yeah.
Yeah. You know,
that was chef's kiss. It's just so funny.
The CGI characters making fun of someone having dead, lifeless eyes.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
The scene where they had, who did Pumbaa in the quote-unquote live action, but not live action Lion King?
I don't remember her voice.
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, Seth Rogen.
Where they had Seth Rogen voicing like five characters on the screen at once.
Yeah, that was fun.
It's like, what's happened to him? I don't know.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Deep
pull for like using Tigra from the worst Avengers series.
Well, yeah. They used Ugly Sonic too.
They had. Oh my God, let's talk about Ugly Sonic, shall we?
Yes.
I can't. This is probably the only thing that could have redeemed Ugly Sonic in the internet's eyes.
This was the whole plan.
This was the whole plan.
This was the plan the whole time.
Yep.
We're going to show Ugly Sonic, but we only put him in for the preview.
See, I kind of want to see that FBI show that Ugly Sonic was working on.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want that on Disney Plus.
I'm just, I watched this, and by the end of it, I'm like, there is so much in here that Disney doesn't own that they're referencing. This has got to be their Amazon wish list.
Yeah, absolutely.
of next quarter's acquisitions. Because, yeah, Warner Brothers stuff was mentioned. Scooby-Doo. Batman makes an appearance. There's a Foghorn Leghorn blink if you miss it kind of joke. Voltron. I had to pause for a second because at one point Chip is walking down Hollywood Boulevard and there's a star on the Walk of Fame for Chun-Li from the Street Fighter series. I'm just like, what in the hell, Disney? How did you get all of this stuff approved?
Very friendly lawyers.
What, one of the dads from South Park makes an appearance. Now, a lot of these cameos, they don't have voices. They're just there, and you're like, what in the world?
So I see myself watching this at least one more time.
You know, yeah, same.
And probably in a month or two. Like, I'm just going to put this on again to catch more of the jokes. It was like watching an airplane movie. There are just so many jokes everywhere on screen that you can't walk away from it. You can't look away. And if you're focusing on this corner, then something in the other corner's gone past you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I absolutely shouted for joy when we see Dale's collection of Chip and Dale merch. And they have the NES cartridge.
Yes.
And a Nintendo Entertainment System right there with the Capcom logo. And I'm like, you crazy sons of bitches, you did it.
Yep.
That's got to be one of the best games on the NES, by the way. If you haven't played it yet, definitely
I
worth it.
I remember playing that.
You can get the Disney Afternoon Humble Bundle today via stream or...
Yeah, I mean, it's available on PS4 and Xbox, whatever. Yeah, the Disney Afternoon Collection. So good.
I was worried because my son did not want to watch it. He is very particular and decides if he doesn't want to watch something, he won't watch it, except he kind of will. So he was coming in and out of the room as I'm watching it. No big deal. And we get to Ugly Sonic. Now, he adores the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. He didn't know any of the backlash leading up to it. And so I'm sitting there and Ugly Sonic is on the screen and my son is there. I'm like, I'm going to have to explain this. I'm going to have to explain what the hell an Ugly Sonic is. And he hasn't asked yet, but it's happening. It's going to happen.
Oh, it's coming.
It's coming. And then I'm going to have to show him pictures to prove that, no, this is not a gag. This really happened. This is real life.
Yeah. My child didn't ask many questions about things like that. Did have a whole lot of talking going on, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just hasn't learned how to watch movies yet. So I'm giving it an A-. I mean, it's good. It's kind of like Rumble. It's inoffensive. It doesn't really do anything terribly daring in its storytelling or what it's doing. Lots of good jokes, lots of nostalgia factor built into it. A better Ready Player One than Ready Player One.
There were some moments of peril.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind if your young ones are easily scared.
Mm-hmm. So
the fact that it didn't take itself seriously helped it immensely.
And 97 minutes.
Yeah. It was short to the point, and it understood the assignment. It knew what it was making when it made it.
And it did well. So I'm for it. You guys got grades for it?
I think A- sounds fair.
Yeah.
You know, about 4.5 out of 5. Really good. Not perfect, but much, much, much better than what I was anticipating.
Oh, I was expecting a dumpster fire.
I was expecting a train wreck or something like that. And I enjoyed the villain. Villain's motivation made sense. I love the villain's plan. And I love that this was one of those situations where when given the proper clearance, Disney allows people to kind of poke fun at the mouse, which doesn't happen a lot. But when you get a chance to poke fun at Disney and Disney's on board, you can get some magical stuff.
To be fair, they never poked fun of the mouse specifically.
No, but I'm in the company.
Yeah.
You know, when I say the mouse,
Death comes for us all.
Yeah.
I'm going to be completely honest, guys. I forgot this thing existed. I saw the trailer when it came out. I'm like, oh, Lord, okay, fine. And then I put it out of my mind until today when Chad informed me, hey, Darren and I are going to watch this later. You should, too. Okay.
You're welcome.
I was pleasantly surprised.
As was I. That might be inflating the grade just a little bit, the pleasant surprise bit. Because I watched some not great stuff, too. Are we good? Do we have more stuff?
I'm good. I'm spent.
Right? We're ready for the random movie?
Oh, real quick. Sorry. Yeah. Actually.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
So, you know those terrifying noises made by the raptors in Jurassic Park?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
right before they're going to rip into your flesh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were sourced from recordings of tortoises in the middle of mating.
Huh.
So, I just thought you needed to know that.
Well, that is certainly a thing that I now know.
Okay.
Huh. How am I going to follow that? Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, I'll apparently be watching Hunt for the Wilder People next month. This month, however, I watched Dark Shadows. Now, I did not watch Dark Shadows, the soap opera. I know of its existence because my mother used to watch it. The story of Barnabas Collins is mostly unknown to me, so take that as it is. When I say that this movie had so much potential in its casting, its direction, story, set design, and then it squandered it for a bunch of jokes that probably only work for fans of the original show, and so many twists in its final moments that it put a satirical telenovela to shame. Dark Shadows is the story of the Collins family, a once important family in the town of Collinsport. Johnny Depp plays Barnabas, a not yet a vampire who still manages to be as lifeless as the corpse he will soon become. Barnabas has a tryst with a servant girl, but then spurns her advances for Josette. Unfortunately for Barnabas, that servant girl, Angelique, is a witch. What a twist. Who enacts her revenge with magic.
Dun, dun, dun!
First to go are Barnabas's parents. Then Josette, jumps to her death from a cliff called Widow's Hill, which, come on.
Yeah.
I mean.
Come on.
Really? Widow's Hill? What did you think was going to happen there? Anyway, Barnabas jumps after her because the movie requires it, and what a twist! He has been cursed to be a vampire and live forever. Because it's that type of show, Barnabas is then buried, undead, and stays there for 196 years. Because they specifically point out, I was in there for 200 years. Don't exaggerate, darling, it was only 196. Into the modern age, 1972. That's when this movie takes place. Maggie Evans is traveling to Collinwood. That's the name of the house. Collinsport is the name of the town.
Oh, okay.
Collinwood is the name of the house. She's going to become the governess. She meets the last of the Collins family. Mother and daughter, and brother to the matriarch with his son. Also, Helena Bonham Carter is there because it's a Tim Burton film. She is the live-in alcoholic psychiatrist. Look at all the dysfunction in the family. It's just...
Just look at it.
Just look at it. The moody teenager is moody. The whacked out son is whacked out. The matriarch's brother is a greedy, self-absorbed jerk. Turns out this is not a twist. That's just a Tim Burton film. What is a twist is a construction crew working at night in order to build a McDonald's. I mean, talk about breaking immersion. This is a movie about a vampire and McDonald's aren't built at night. They're built in the daytime because you have to pay extra to have people working at night, and the clown don't swing that way.
No, can confirm.
Same.
But if they weren't working at night, then they would have found Barnabas just in time for him to burst into flames. Instead, Barnabas kills them all, apologetically. "I'm very sorry to do this, but you can't imagine how thirsty I am," and drinks their blood. And then makes his way to Collinwood, being perplexed by modern stuff in a way that is entirely derivative of the way that the Sanderson sisters did it in 1993. And they did it better. Barnabas makes it back home, introduces himself to the matriarch, shows her that the family is actually sitting on a vast fortune and is pretty wealthy, they just didn't know it. He's introduced as a distant relative, and he begins the process of restoring the family name. But Angelique is still alive. What a twist! She now owns and operates a competing and now dominant business to the Collins. When she finds out that Barnabas is back, she goes to meet him and seduce him, because some crushes last, I guess?
Sure.
So as part of the seduction process, Barnabas gives in, and they have the most violent and unsatisfying sex scene that has ever been put to screen, and I've seen Gaspar Noé's Love.
Can confirm.
However, this does not lead to Angelique successfully wooing Barnabas, just to her getting to have a massive mess in her office and Barnabas rejecting her. Again. Barnabas goes from this moment and decides that as a show of power, he needs to host a ball. Because rich families no longer have balls, he throws a happening instead. On the advice of the moody 15-year-old. What do they need? They need a mirror ball. And enough spirits to fill a schooner's hull. And Alice Cooper. Cut to the night of the happening, and the four members of the cast of the original Dark Shadows show up in a cameo. Because of it's got to happen.
Sure.
It's established.
Yep.
And we discover that somehow Alice Cooper still looks as good as he did in the 1970s. What a twist. So at this point, we're only 30 minutes left of the movie. The twists at this point are going to come rapid fire. The new governess has been seeing the ghost of Josette her whole life. Angelique turns the town against the Collins family, again by saying that they're harboring a vampire. Why this worked in 1972, when quite honestly, they should have made the Collins like heroes at that point. It's like, really? This is Maine. We have our own vampire? Get that king fella out of there! Barnabas is buried alive, again, but only short term, as he's rescued by the whacked out son who's been seeing his mother's ghost. The Collins family and Angelique have a battle wherein we learn that the moody teacher is actually a werewolf. The house can come to life and start fighting. The ghost of the son's mother actually is real and is showing up to fight as well. Barnabas chases the new governess, with whom he's fallen in love, to Widow's Hill, and she tells him to turn her into a vampire. When he refuses, she jumps off the cliff. So he has to jump after her to turn her into a vampire to save her on life, I guess. Here's the thing. There's a lot of potential in this movie, but it kind of fails as a movie. As a soap opera, fits a little bit better, but as a movie, the action has to hold for just too long for it to really fly. Depp as Barnabas actually starts off pretty wonderfully perplexed and awkward, but he never really comes into his own as the charismatic presence that he should be as a vampire, even if he's been buried for a couple hundred years. Angelique probably fares the best as the villain, even though we're never given a better motivation than, I love me some Collins passionate hugging. Michelle Pfeiffer is absolutely wasted in her role as the matriarch. Helena Bonham Carter is there to be there. And so that she can kind of be teased at the end for a final plot twist that'll go nowhere, but it does kind of fit the soap opera type ending. Christopher Lee shows up as a ship captain, but isn't given enough screen time to be a badass. And so the one that comes out the best at the end of the movie, and the only reason to really watch the movie, is for Alice Cooper. who both looks and sounds amazing. And fun fact, they recreated the original band from 1972. They didn't just have Alice Cooper there. Like, they hired actors who looked like the original band.
Oh, nice.
And then kind of fixed them in post to actually look like the band he had in 72. I wanted to like it more than I did. Unfortunately, it falls into the Tim Burton problem of a good opening, a rushed ending, and a boring middle. So don't be like me. With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. So you can find geeky news, etc. at geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversation and tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? And Week 3. Then head over to twitch.tv/geekcavepodcast to see Darren play some video games. Or find our YouTube channel and see Geek Cave Plays, watch Retromantics. So for Kent, our Neil Peart setting the pace, Darren Wright, our Geddy Lee frontman and foundation, Justin White, our Alex Lifeson providing the complexity and the flair, I'm Chad Savage, your John Rutsey, and only the real fans know who I am. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.